This is Twit.
Is there something wrong with WPA2?
Oh, yeah. There is a known password attack known as the crack attack. If somebody sniffs your authenticating to an access point, they can then perform an offline brute force attack. So consequently, the strength of your password to the access point is important.
Mm.
And so in various settings where maybe the password is sort of predictable or guessable, you know, like it's the car dealership or a company that may have their name or address or something in the password, there is some vulnerability. So there is a known problem with WPA2, but the good news is WPA3 fixes not only that, but offers some new features, which we've been wanting, everybody's been wanting for a long time. So it's been 15 years since WPA2 arrived back in 2004. So it's been that's been around a while. You might say that's 14 years since it's 2018, except that we're not actually going to get WPA3 till late next year. So, okay, it will be 15 years by the time we actually get WPA3. It's unclear whether just because of the Wi-Fi Alliance, whether and their stickers and their certification programs, whether existing hardware will be upgradable. We have to imagine that our smartphones and, you know, like, you know, Apple and Android and widely deployed devices will be upgradable. This probably requires the baseband processor to be upgraded, which I assume can be done over the air by the phone provider. But it's not clear whether we're all going to have to get new Wi-Fi routers if we want to use this, or whether a firmware update would be able to bring these features to us. Again, this is all licensing based and certification based, and you know, the Wi-Fi Alliance is the Wi-Fi Alliance. And as I said, I got excited this morning by the idea that they had published the specs, and it turns out it was just an absolute tease. So I was like, oh, okay, fine. So it is, of course, backward compatible, so that any device that isn't WPA3 will be able to fall back to WPA2 functionality. There are two flavors. There is WPA3 Personal and WPA3 Enterprise. The Personal brings better protections to individuals by, as I mentioned, and as you prompted me for, Leo, providing more robust password-based authentication. It's known that there is a weak password authentication problem. WPA3 uses something known as SAE, Simultaneous Authentication of Equals, which replaces the longstanding PSK that we've talked about and pounded on for years, the pre-shared key approach, which was built into WPA2. So this SAE, the Simultaneous Authentication of Equals technology, is resistant to offline dictionary attacks, which the crack attack makes possible under WPA2. So that you know, strengthens Wi-Fi. And again, I don't have to tell everybody that, you know, the world has just become Wi-Fi. I mean, it's incredible to me. Once upon a time, it was, you know, do you have Wi-Fi? You know, now it's like, well, do you have a cell phone? It's like they don't ask you. They say, what's your mobile number? So it's like, yes, what's your Wi-Fi? So it's just ubiquitous, obviously. So it was the CRACK attack, K-R-A-C-K, which stood for Key Reinstallation Attack. And at the time, we covered it on the podcast extensively. So if anyone is interested in a refresher, you can find the podcast, CRACK, K-R-A-C-K, which is an attack on WPA2 authentication, which allowed someone sniffing the transaction to grab it. And remember also that it was possible to deauthenticate anyone by sending a deauthenticate packet to the access point, which would force a reauthentication, allowing attacker to capture the authentication traffic if they showed up too late otherwise, and then launch the offline attack. So a determined attacker who is either passive and patient or active would be able to, given the complexity of the password, and you know, Wi-Fi passwords are probably suffer from a lack of sufficient complexity just because people don't think that's important enough. That could be a problem. So the Wi-Fi Alliance brags that this WPA3 allows users to choose passwords that are easier to remember because a traffic analysis attack, which WPA2 does suffer from, would not function, would not succeed under WPA3. And WPA3 also gives us perfect forward secrecy. So we know what that means. That means that traffic captured now cannot be later decrypted if in the future the key is determined. So perfect forward secrecy is another good feature of encryption, which arguably all modern crypto should have. And when we have WPA3, we'll have it in our Wi-Fi for the first time. We don't have that now. We have that in the higher level links in TLS. So it's good to have it there, but not at the Wi-Fi link. There's also an enterprise version of WPA3, as there is sort of nominally for WPA2, which increases the encryption key strength. And it's not clear to me why they just don't have that in WPA3 personal, but I guess they want to have a higher class grade. In their scant coverage of this, they said that WPA3 Enterprise offers an optional mode using 192-bit minimum strength security protocols to better protect sensitive data. And it uses, you know, just larger communications protocols. Presumably, it requires a little more oomph at each of the endpoints. And so it may not be something that a weak IoT device wants to or needs to deploy. And again, it's not clear to me that there's a compelling need, but of course that the enterprise WPA offers Kerberos key negotiation and lots more fancy features that the typical end user just doesn't need. However, in terms of good features, we've got a couple things. Top of the list, I think. Well, there's two. We now encrypt opportunistically open Wi-Fi networks, which is like, yay. Why has this taken this long? We've often talked about it. I've lamented its lack because it is so easy to do. I was talking about it just a couple of weeks ago, how in a world where we have Diffie-Hellman encryption, even though you don't have authentication, which means you're still susceptible to a man in the middle, with Diffie-Hellman key exchange, that's what I meant to say, sorry, Diffie-Hellman key exchange, in plain sight, endpoints can establish a secret that no passive observer can determine. So, like, for a long time, there's been no need for unencrypted Wi-Fi. You could have Wi-Fi that where you walk into any, you know, coffee shop or car dealership waiting for your car or airport, and it's like free Wi-Fi, which is also per connection encrypted. But we haven't had that because the Wi-Fi Alliance didn't give it to us until now and until next year, late next year. So there is something known as OWE, Opportunistic Wireless Encryption, which is defined by the IETF. It's an IETF defined RFC 8110, which the Wi-Fi Alliance has adopted and will be part of WPA3. So, unfortunately, it will require the retirement or the upgrading of each endpoint for us to have this, but it does mean that in the absence of an active man-in-the-middle attack, because remember that Diffie-Hellman key exchange doesn't authenticate. It allows, as long as you know who you're talking to, thus the authentication component, it allows a visible exchange of data to establish a secret between two parties. But if somebody gets in the middle and pretends to be the other person to each end, then that person ends up establishing secrets with each end and is able to decrypt the traffic moving through. But still, much better than nothing. And the last new feature of WPA3 is they call Wi-Fi Easy Connect, which they're not describing, and I hoped to get it, but it was one of those, I got, you know, the 7-page teaser with acronyms defined. Okay, thank you. They did say that it uses visible QR codes printed on access points and IoT devices, and that it uses public key crypto. So we can pretty much reverse engineer what it is from that. What that will mean is that that a router will have a factory set asymmetric private key burned into its firmware with the public key shown as a QR code on its exterior label. And the same will be true of an IoT device. It'll come with a per device private key, and printed on it will be a little QR code, which is the matching public key. And as we know, that just that allows us to solve this problem. It allows a device with a camera to obtain the public key for which the matching private key is only known to the device on which that public key is printed. The public key would allow the device seeing the QR code to generate a random number, we'll call that the ephemeral key, encrypt that under the public key, which can then only be decrypted by the device's secret private key. So it allows the secure establishment of a temporary link because it doesn't matter if somebody, even in this case, isn't a man in the middle. A man in the middle attacker can't change anything or has no way of decrypting it. Essentially, you can think of the QR codes as optical channel out of band information exchange. It's out of band in that it's just sitting there as a label, and if you don't have, you know, optical access to it, then you have no way of knowing what the device's public key is. So they don't explain how this works in detail. they talk about a device like a smartphone being used for a device that has a limited user interface. So a router has a very limited UI, and you know, a light bulb or an IoT device, a burglar alarm, a switch on the door or something, very limited UI. So the idea would be you scan the QR code with your phone. It then participates in this interchange in order to get the devices set up in a way that is now, and you know, people have been doing setting up IoT devices using a temporary hotspot in a smartphone for a while. The problem is it is vulnerable to an attacker watching that, who is present watching that process occur. There's a window of vulnerability. That's what this eliminates. And it also means that just moving forward, anytime you want to associate you want to establish a secure association, if there's an optical channel that allows that to happen, it can be done with no true security. So they're calling it Easy Connect. It's we know from having discussed WPS, that was the previous easy way of connecting that ended up being horribly flawed, because it turns out it was an 8-digit code that could be chopped into a 4-digit and a 3-digit, because the last digit was calculable. It was just a check digit, and it allowed the whole thing to be brute forced very easily. So we're going to hope that the Wi-Fi Alliance has not made any similar mistakes. In any event, we're getting a bunch of welcome features. We'll have to wait another year and a half, and then it will require that hardware be changed and updated. But as that happens over time, I mean, given that we were with this last WPA2 spec for 15 years, there'll certainly be time for us to be obsoleting and replacing devices with WPA3, and so we just get more security. And again, as with the case with LTE, we would like these radio links to be secure, but to the degree that they are simply the carriers of the lower layer traffic of sessions, which are themselves much more secure and authenticated, we could argue that so long as what they are carrying is providing it for its own security, then the worst that can be done is a denial of service attack, or things break for some reason, but there's no active vulnerability or lack of privacy or information disclosure. So anyway, that's WPA3. I'm sure we'll know much more about it. I hope we know more about it as we get much closer. It'll be about a year and a half from now. So I'm sure we could calculate which episode of Security Now that will be.
And it comes in conjunction with 802.11ax, right? It doesn't require it, but I know that that's part of the improved spec for AX.
Yeah.
Which also is a year and a half out.
Yeah.
Yeah.